Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and today's conversation is with visionary, author, agent, business guru, and near-death experience survivor, Bill Gladstone. Did I miss anything, Bill?
Oh, I'm sure you did. Champion golfer. I'm the best of the worst in my division.
Hey, now. Now you're just bragging. That's good stuff. Bill, you are responsible for a lot of wonderful works that are out there, in addition to agenting the likes of a Neil Donald Walsh and Eckhart Tolle, who wrote, of course, The Power of Now. And Neil Donald is responsible for all the Conversations with God series. But you also are responsible for the Dummies, the books for dummies coming out, and Chicken Soup for the Soul with Jack Canfield. I know you had a hand in that.
No, I met Jack right after he had already done his book deal. So we became good friends, and I actually co-wrote the Golden Motorcycle Gang with him, but we were not the agent for the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, much to our disappointment, because, of course, that sold almost as much as our Dummy series. But, you know, you can't represent everyone.
No, you can't, but you're close to representing everyone, that's for sure.
I do want to mention, since you mentioned Neil Donald, he has a new book, which is really Conversations with God, Book 4, An Unexpected Dialogue, which will be coming out March 17th from Rainbow Ridge, which is owned by Bob Friedman, who is the publisher of Hampton Roads, which was the original publisher of Conversations with God. And this is the first book in almost 20 years that really completes what Neil thought was a trilogy, but ends up being four books. He was awakened by the powers that be, God, for those who believe in God, and told he had to write this book. So we're very excited that this series will now be completed with a fourth book.
Well, when did you get interested in this kind of work, Bill? Because it is not the path that is always traveled, although now I'm so glad to say that it's more traveled these days. But tell us what happened. Rewind the clock for us and explain
what
happened.
Well, it's totally accidental.
Well, that's always the best way, right?
I was raised outside of New York City. My father owned a publishing company, Arco Publishing, and he did very practical books. They were books on how to score high on the college admissions test, the civil service exams, the Air Force exams, and they were really books, we used to brag, written for people who couldn't read. They were such low level. They were for people who wanted to get a job as a toll collector, as a janitor, get into the Army. Right. And that was the basis of his company. And then he expanded from that, and he did health food books. He was one of his bestsellers way back then was Vitamin E, Key to a Healthy Heart, and he was a pioneer in that. And then he did get a little bit involved with esoterica in that he did Kiro's book of palmistry and a whole series of books, but they weren't very significant back then, and I wasn't interested at all. Mm-hmm. The first sort of out there book he did that was a bestseller was a book on biorhythms by Bernie Gittleson. At the time, biorhythms was brand new. Gittleson got on television for the Super Bowl the year Fran Tarkington was the quarterback, did his biorhythm and predicted who would win.
Right.
So that was kind of fun and, you know, made us, from a commercial point of view, not close to these kinds of books and this material. Mm-hmm. But the real influence on me was my mother, who was a natural psychic. Back in those days, people didn't openly confess that they were psychic, but she had a number of awareness moments that saved our lives. One time she was in Paris with my father and in the middle of the night woke up from a dream and called our house and our custodian and said, "You've got to get everyone out of the house. The boiler's about to blow up." And sure enough, the caretaker did call the fire department and the police, and they did come. And they said, "Really lucky you guys got out of here. In another half hour, this would have blown."
Wow.
And she had another incident. They only missed a plane once. It was a flight from Chicago after one of the book shows. And they were told, "Well, we could still get you on the flight, but your bags won't make it." And my mother just said, no, that's okay. She didn't know the plane was going to crash, but the plane did crash. And it was the only time they ever chose not to, you know, make
a flight. Yeah.
And she just had those kinds. So I wouldn't necessarily even call it psychic so much, but she had these abilities. And, you know, so I was very open that the world was more mysterious than I was learning at Yale and Harvard. I was very much on track. I had a mathematical ability. I actually taught my math class when I was 12 years old because the math teacher had an emergency and was gone for, I think it was 6 weeks, and I just took over and taught the class. I went through all of high school without ever making a mistake in math and won a prestigious award for math at Andover, which was a very competitive high school. Then I went to Yale, and I was going to be a math major, but I was very disappointed at the time in that they kept assigning me math classes where English wasn't the dominant language of the professor.
Right.
And it just didn't seem relevant. This was at a time when the Black Panthers were, you know, hot at Yale, and the whole, you know, country was undergoing the Vietnam War demonstrations, and it just didn't seem that relevant to be a mathematician. Mm-hmm. So I actually wandered into anthropology and became very interested in anthropology. I majored actually in Spanish literature because I had lived in Spain when I was a young boy at 15 and was fluent in Spanish, and became enamored of Cien Años de Soledad, 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel García Márquez. Actually wrote my thesis on that book before it was translated into English. Mm-hmm. So I had a kind of eclectic background, thought I might want to be a teacher, went to Andover and actually taught Spanish for a year. But in the middle of doing all that, I was tapped by Rod Serling to go around the world as his researcher for In Search of Ancient Mysteries. So I was actually paid to search for ancient mysteries anywhere in the world it might take me. And it took me all over the world, and Nazca lines in Peru to, you know, interviewing...
What a gig.
Swamis in India.
Yeah,
it was quite a gig. And as a result of that, I got a second gig going around the world for another film company to follow the historical story of Jesus. And that brought me in contact with the Dalai Lama and the spiritual leaders of the Ahmadi and the Greek Orthodox and the Christians and the Jewish faith. And so very sort of wide exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Despite all of that, I ended up, you know, going into publishing. That was what my father wanted, and my mother, and we had a family company. And I was not forced into it, but it was, you know, it was a sticky situation that my father had a partner, and if he died, we would lose, you know, our publishing company.
Sure.
And I took a leave of absence to make another film, and while I was gone, my father had his fourth heart attack, and so he sold the company. And he sold it to Prentice Hall. And so when I came back from my film, I no longer had the obligation to stay in publishing. So I actually took a job in filmmaking out in Hollywood. But even though it was a high-level position as associate producer for a major feature film, when I was told that part of my duties was to help the writer with his writing block, the screenwriter, and that meant I had to procure cocaine, I just said, that's not my gig, and I left. And I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do.
The 80s are so interesting.
Yeah,
they,
and,
right?
And I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do. I wrote a novel, which I actually have not yet published because it was kind of dark and maybe too revealing. It was called Suicide Plus. Mm-hmm. But while I was doing that, I got calls to help out people in publishing, and one of the calls was from Peter Yovanovitch, whose father, William Yovanovitch, was running Harcourt Brace Yovanovitch, and they were opening up a new company in San Diego and needed a young person who understood books. And I said, well, I understand books. He said, okay. And next thing I knew, they had me on a plane out here with a signing bonus. And, you know, I was ensconced as editor-in-chief, senior editor for Harcourt's trade division. And I was still, you know, just in my 20s. So did that for a couple of years, but I still had the bug. I wanted to make films. So I was actually let go through a very interesting story that I recount in one of my books I've written about it called Be the Deal. But within literally minutes, I had arranged my own office with a small publishing company, Avant Books, and set up my company, Waterside Productions, to be a film company. So as a film company, you need money. We didn't have any money, so as a sideline, I started agenting books.
Mm-hmm.
And the first book I agented was actually in this space. It was David Loy's The Sphinx and the Rainbow, which is still in print, retitled now as An Arrow Through Time. Mm-hmm. It was the first book that took the scientific approach of looking at the world as a hologram, which would explain how you can actually predict the future, but would also explain why often predictions are wrong. And that book was very cutting edge and, you know, put me in touch with other cutting edge people. But immediately, since I needed to support my family, I focused on books about technology because that's what was happening at that time. This was 1982. And overnight, we became the leading source of information about computers in the entire world. We not only did the Dummies books, but we represent people like Linus Torvalds, Peter Norton, really the pioneers, that not the not Al Gore, who takes credit, but the actual people who created the internet were my clients, among others. And that was, you know, just a boom. We generated several billions of dollars of sales just in those books. And then things did start to peter out around the end of the century when the internet really took over. It was what caused the boom, but it also caused the demise in terms of printed books, because now you could get the information about how to use Windows and everything else right off the internet.
Yeah, so let me stop you there for 1 second, Bill. So here you are, and you're on this wave, right? And you're seeing the technology wave go. It seems like you're always on the cusp of the next wave. What do you see now in business and technology as the next wave?
Well, we're getting to that because the story is linked. Mm-hmm. So what happens as the technology starts to abate, I reconnect with David Loy, mm-hmm. who has become a friend, that first book that's kind of science but spirituality, mm-hmm. and he puts me in touch with a man named Dr. Irvin Laszlo. Mm-hmm. And Irvin, even though he's done 40 books, has never really had any major success. So this is really the answer, the long answer to your original question. Mm-hmm. What got me into these mind, body, spirit books was really my relationship with Irvin Laszlo. Mm-hmm. Because as a scientist, he was looking at the interconnection between science and spirituality. And he was looking at it from a scientific perspective primarily. And the first book that we did together was Science in the Akashic Field, which has gone on to sell over 100,000 copies. Yeah. And it was really through that book that I became more open to the spiritual side. It was shortly after that that I met Neil Donald Walsh, and that led, you know, to success with those kinds of books, which then led to representing Eckhart, and, you know, I've even represented Deepak Chopra and Marianne Williamson on special projects, and Barbara Marx Hubbard and Barbara DeAngelis, and, you know, that whole space is very interconnected. And, you know, we do a good job as an agency. And so when you have success, I've never actually sought a client, but word spreads. So people would just come to me. And yes, when I met somebody who I thought, you know, fit, we would say, hey, you know, why don't you do a book? Yeah, and cool. So that's how I sort of evolved from very, you know, just the facts, ma'am, kind of agenting to, whoa, there's something mysterious going on here that we need to explore. And fortunately for us, some of these books have gone on to sell millions and millions of copies. But to answer your question, what is the next big thing? We're in it right now.
Yeah.
And the next big thing is the continued merging of science and spirituality. It's really going to be a new science and a new spirituality. All the old dogmas are falling apart. What we're seeing, unfortunately, in this election right now is just a symptom of that. The old models no longer work. The reality is neither the Republican nor the Democratic Party represents the will of the people of the United States. In the same way, none of our present institutions, and there's many good ones, and, you know, I'm not denigrating the good that is in these institutions, including Harvard and Yale and Stanford and our other universities, but they're all actually tainted. Mm-hmm. They're all actually too committed to an old paradigm that is no longer sustainable. Mm-hmm. And something new is emerging. And that something new is truly new. It's not just regurgitating the, quote, spiritual wisdom that, you know, supposedly the new age has resuscitated from the old age. Mm-hmm. There is ancient wisdom on this planet that has been preserved in indigenous peoples and in many what I guess are now calling channeled works. Mm-hmm. And that information is coming forth, but it's coming forth with greater awareness that actually didn't exist. What worked 2,000 or 5,000 years ago is not necessarily what we need today. We need the wisdom side of that, but we need the wisdom side of that combined with the technology side of that and combined with the practical side of, hey, we've got 7 billion people on this planet. They all have to eat. They all have to be educated. They all have to, you know, have safe places to reside. Mm-hmm. How is that going to happen?
Right.
That is the crisis point that we are at. And as Dr. Laszlo has said, we're either going to self-destruct or we're going to find a nonlinear, unexpected solution that is going to significantly alter the way human beings perceive themselves. And once we alter the way human beings perceive themselves, people will alter their behavior.
And so for you, Irvin Laszlo opens your eyes to the science and the spirituality blending together. What do you think, Bill, it's going to take for the masses that are, you know, wanting to rewind the clock and go back to, you know, the good old days, the good old boys, get my milk delivered in glass jars? You know, for those people that want to put up the wall, how can we bridge?
Well, I'm not sure wanting milk delivered.
That's not bad, but you know what I'm saying.
But let me just say, and the reason I said that, and I think you said it for a reason, I was one of those fortunate enough to have the milk delivered when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And I do long for the nostalgia of the past.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in the 50s. I actually can't imagine a better time, at least to be a white American male, than the 1950s. Life was easy and fun. And, you know, even though we had drills about, you know, Russia and nuclear weapons, and we weren't really that nervous about things.
Right.
Today, we're bombarded with the reality of suffering going on throughout the world every single second of the day.
Right.
We see that little boy in Aleppo covered in blood, absolutely in shock. We see what happens when there's a tsunami. We see what happens when there's a hurricane. We see the flooding. We can't escape the pain, and we can't escape the fact that we're all connected. Now, there are different groups at different times that primarily through fear and a need to hold on to something may appear to be going backwards, whether, you know, you're pro or against the wall, or you're pro or against allowing Christian Syrian people to come into the United States. I mean, there's a lot to be scared of. And, you know, I don't fault people for being what I would consider atavistic.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it's only by going forward and overcoming those fears that we're going to have any semblance of a civilized world in the future. And do I have the solution for that? No.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have some ideas on things that can help? Absolutely. Am I alone with these ideas? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
There's hundreds of thousands of people on this planet with higher states of awareness, and it's up to those people to impact other people who will then impact other people and hopefully eventually create a tipping point of 4 billion, since there's 7 billion here.
Mm-hmm.
If more than half of the planet starts thinking in a more modern, altruistic way, I think that we can save the day.
Right.
So that's really the mission that I see, you know, Waterside Productions has as an agency representing thinkers that do bring this information. I see that as my responsibility as an author myself. And you don't have to be an author to be involved. I mean, you can be a business leader, or you can just be a stay-at-home mom and, you know, be sure that your children are being raised with this higher sense of awareness and purpose.
Right.
We are not here randomly.
No.
And it is important that everyone on this planet contribute in whatever way they can.
Mm-hmm.
And that may even be the case for someone who's, you know, unfortunately born with a birth defect and isn't able to, you know, be a fully operating human being. They still have something to offer, and we need to acknowledge this. And I think this is why you have such tensions right now of the back and the forth. And, you know, we need to respect diversity. At the same time that we respect diversity, we also need to respect the lack of desire to be diverse that many people may have.
Right.
Because within diversity, it's perfectly okay not to shove somebody else's value system down yours.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a complicated equation, and I don't think anyone out there or any single group has the solution.
I recently had a conversation with Carolyn Mace, best-selling author and, of course, author of Anatomy of the Spirit, Sacred Contracts. So she was saying that the Vatican now has an advisory board that's a galactic advisory board because they are acknowledging life on other planets. This is groundbreaking. So they have astrophysicists.
Mm-hmm.
And they have philosophers, and they have all of these people coming together to be a board of advisors for the Vatican, because we are galactic. This isn't just global. We're not alone, right?
Well, this is absolutely true, though I'm always cautious because there is no evidence of actual physical contact with alien beings. I mean, I've done the research, and I mean, there's some disputed cases such as Roswell and a few others. I've even funded the Phoenix Lights movie, which, you know, does provide evidence that there has been intergalactic vehicles, if you will, spaceships, whatever you want to call them,
right,
within our atmosphere. So there has been, you know, some isolated contact.
Right.
But what's most important when you're talking about galactic is at the higher levels, a galactic being and a, quote, spirit being or angel being is the same.
Mm.
Whether you're talking about angels or you're talking about galactic beings, there is no question that there are higher level beings in the universe. And the most interesting speculation is that those higher beings are us. There's part of us that is connected with what people are calling galactic beings, and that that awareness is available to us. Whether you're looking at it from a scientific perspective, such as Irvin Laszlo's description of the zero point, where all information is accessible to everyone,
mm-hmm,
or you're looking at it in a more, I wouldn't necessarily say religious way, but, you know, obviously we have religions that, you know, believe literally that the, you know, they pray to Christ because they believe Christ is listening, or they pray to God because they believe God is listening.
Right.
Well, what are they praying to? They are praying to an intelligence, and, you know, those who are completely atheistic and believe there is nothing beyond what they can touch and feel, I would just say, I think you need to reexamine your belief system and allow yourself to experience what is really happening on a day-to-day basis, because we cannot explain everything if we limit ourselves to materialistic measures.
Uh-huh.
I've just written a series of books called A Skeptic's Guide to the Universe,
uh-huh,
and much to my surprise, I'm writing them with a channel, Marissa Morris.
Uh-huh.
I didn't believe in channeling until just a few years ago. I just thought, you know, it's somebody's overworked imagination bringing
right
in information.
Sure.
It's unprovable and, you know, more than likely to be incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this was an unexpected turn for me. And in these channelings, I have been receiving just amazing information. I do encourage people to, we wanted to get the information out quickly. We actually have 10 books already,
mm-hmm,
under the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is the first, and the Skeptic's Guide to Heaven, the Skeptic's Guide to Climate Change and other topics, but they're all available on Amazon, and
mm-hmm,
I do think people will be interested. We will be reconstituting some of the shorter books and probably releasing these books through a major publisher sometime next year, but it's interesting because the guides that have come in have actually asked that I be involved because I represent the skeptic,
mm-hmm,
having gone to Harvard and Yale and having been entrenched in mathematics and even having been published by the Yale Scientific for an article I wrote as an undergraduate, I really am skeptical of these unprovable, weird communications. But the more that I learn and am able to test the premises, the more I understand that this is real.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of our everyday reality. And the guides have actually said, well, Bill, you're going to be the perfect model. If people just follow your journey, we're going to get other skeptics. Because on one level, the skeptic ultimately becomes the greatest protagonist,
mm-hmm,
because they're the ones that can communicate. I make the analogy with who was the president that opened up our relationship with China. It was Nixon, who was the most anti-China candidate we had at that
mm-hmm
time.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes coming from the opposite side actually allows someone to be the best spokesman for a new movement.
You know what? And that's why you and I are friends, Bill, because I'm, you know, I'm a journalist. You don't get more skeptical than the journalists, right? So for me to believe a medium or a psychic could do anything other than BS their way through a conversation took a lot of evidence. And like you, with your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, a lot of evidence had to come through to shift that paradigm for you.
And one of the things I want to say is I'm still a skeptic. And one of the reasons I'm working with Marissa is even though she is the clairvoyant medium, she's a skeptic.
Right.
90% of the mediums, she trains other mediums,
mm-hmm,
and you know, is quite successful, has over 100 proven mediums that are learning from her.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they all come to her is she, unlike anyone else, is never satisfied with the initial communication.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's always pushing, okay, so we've got Steve Jobs here.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the Steve Jobs when he was 20? Is this the Steve Jobs when he passed? Or is this the Steve Jobs spirit that is still evolving after his physical death?
Right.
So she's very precise, and we're asking, and we have spoken with Steve, and we've spoken with Einstein, we've spoken with Freud. We can speak with the spirit of any individual that has ever been on this planet, which is quite extraordinary. We can also speak with the essence of any element. So we've spoken with water. We've spoken with oxygen. Everything on this planet has consciousness within it.
Right.
And this is something that, you know, we were taught in school couldn't possibly be true. We have animate and we have inanimate.
Mm-hmm.
No questions. It's living or it's dead. End of story.
Right.
Well, obviously, there's value in the distinction, but we've oversimplified, as we must, living on the human plane, because when you get into deeper discussions and investigations of the true nature of reality, there is consciousness within the inanimate as well as what we call the living. So once you cross that bridge, all kinds of opportunities for further exploration arise.
And that's the thing, that's science. We thought the world was flat. We thought it was okay to smoke. There's public service announcements from 1949 with doctors lighting up Camels asking, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" We go with the information we have at the time. So we keep asking
questions.
Actually,
I think those commercials continued right up through the mid-50s because I saw some of them as a kid.
I'm sure. And, you know, I remember being on airplanes with a smoking and a non-smoking section.
Yep.
I mean, good grief. So we do what we know at the time to be true, and then we keep pushing the envelope with questions and information. It's the only way we can change the reality is more information. So through all the interviews you've been doing and with the channeling, I'm sure you're familiar with Paul Selig. We've had conversation with Paul, Book of Mastery and Book of Love, and all. He has 9 channels that come through him, and he was a professor at NYU and got his master's at Yale, and he was completely against all this stuff. And then the voices kept coming, and he was like, oh, geez, do I need to get medicated? But, you know, this is the thing.
I have to be honest, I have not read any of his books. I'm actually kind of avoiding other channeled material because I want to just keep, you know, my focus on Marissa, because Marissa, to me, is the most unusual channel. I have worked in the past with, many, many successful authors, John Edwards and others who, you know, had their abilities.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them, in my experience, have had the ability that Marissa has to go higher and higher, and has this burning curiosity. Her fundamental question that started her on her journey is, who is Marissa? Because she also had 2 near-death experiences, and during those near-death experiences met what she felt were her higher selves.
Mm-hmm.
And I say selves because it's evolving. She ended up meeting 3 different versions of herself, and she ended up actually just recently realizing that they weren't even really her higher self. They were way stations towards her higher self. And so she's constantly asked the question, who am I, who am I, who am I? And she's gotten some answers.
Mm-hmm.
There's different levels of overlapping. The reason people with unity consciousness feel we are all one is at the level of this universe, there is a creator being, God or goddess, if you want to call it, energy is really, because it's kind of neutral, that does encompass all of the lower levels. According to the information she's received, there's 12 levels.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of us are duplicates up to level 2, level 3, level 4, level 5, even level 6 or 7. So we might share a soul group. We might share a soul mission.
Mm-hmm.
We might share certain spiritual characteristics.
Right.
And if you keep going up high enough, we're all actually created by one consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that level, we are all one. What's really interesting to me as a mathematician is this is just one universe. Then there's other creator gods in other universes that may have created other universal laws. We have the laws that we respect, like gravity and inertia and, you know, the physical laws. Those laws actually may only be operating in our particular universe, and there may be other universes that operate with completely different laws altogether.
Wow. So in all this, you know, research and all these decades, Bill, with the authors that you've represented, plus with your own writing and your old traveling of the globe, what do you absolutely know for sure to be true?
What I know personally, and this may blow the mind of the listeners, is that the soul that I am, the consciousness that I am, is eternal. Mm-hmm. And I don't speculate. It's not a I think. It's an I know. Mm-hmm. I know this in part because of my near-death experience, and that has been reinforced by the information that I've been receiving from these guides, which insofar as I can use logic to prove or disprove their statements, it holds up to logic. Mm-hmm. I can't prove it in the way that traditional scientists would want it to be proved, but I have experienced it, and the combination of logic and experience is sufficient proof for me. When I had my near-death experience, I was in a state of total bliss. I wrote about it in my novel, The 12, mm-hmm. and that experience at that time...
Walk us through what happened to you, Bill. Walk us through
well,
it.
Well, what happened to me was very simple. Mm-hmm. I had the flu. Mm-hmm. I was 15 years old, and we had a family doctor, and he made house calls. So that day he said, well, you know, I can't come over there. Why don't you bring him in? So I was living in Tarrytown, New York, and they brought me over, and they sat me on the table and said, I'm going to give you this shot, and just sit here, and I'll be back in 2 minutes, and this should do the trick. Well, he gave me a shot, and the next memory I had was being in the corner of this small examination room in a state of total bliss, mm-hmm. and then being distracted by a loud noise and thinking, oh, what's that noise? Oh, that man's making that noise. Why is that man making that noise? Oh, that man's wearing a white coat. That man must be a doctor. Why is that doctor so concerned? Oh, that doctor's concerned because he's trying to get the attention of that body, and that body's not responding. Oh, that's my body. I guess I better get back to my body so the doctor won't be so concerned. And then the next thing I knew, I was back in my body, my physical body, and I saw a face that went from sheer panic to relief, mm-hmm. and then was told, well, your pulse stopped, you turned green, I thought you were gone. Just sit here, you know, for a moment and let's hope, you know, you're okay.
Right.
And that was the experience. So at the time, it was, you know, quite impactful, and I talked about it with my parents, and I was not encouraged. I was told, you know, look, you know, there's probably some explanation. You're lucky you're alive. Mm-hmm. The oxygen didn't go to your brain. You had a hallucination. You know, what you experienced out of your body and seeing your body, you know, none of that really happened. And, you know, don't talk about it because, you know, you're going to go to Harvard and Yale, and we don't want
anyone thinking you're weird. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of, after 2 weeks, and, you know, and I was a very mainstream kid. I was captain of the football team, captain of the baseball team,
right.
You know, championship wrestler. I mean, I was an A-plus student. I was a normal kid who wanted, you know, I was very competitive. I was raised to be competitive, and I always wanted to be the best at whatever I did. And, you know, talking about my near-death experience is not going to be helpful.
No.
So I rarely spoke about it, and it was only, you know, many years later when I started encountering other people who had near-death experiences, and when it became more acceptable to talk about these experiences, did I even remember, you know, that I had had that experience? Because it was really, oh, maybe it wasn't hallucinations.
Mm-hmm. Did it heighten your intuition and your spidey senses? Did they go bonkers afterwards? Did you notice a change? No.
No, I've always been very intuitive.
Right.
The only thing, I just consider myself lucky. I'm always in the right place at the right time.
Sure.
You know, and it's funny. People, you know, often say, did you channel the 12? And I say, no, I didn't channel the 12. I was channeled to live a life so that I could write the book based on my actual experiences. Mm-hmm. I actually realized, even before I was verbal, when I was probably only 2 or 3, that it was not an accident that I was here, that I had come on a very specific mission, mm-hmm. and that I was here to do something. And I only recently sort of reconnected through the guides and the channeling with, you know, that purpose being to raise the awareness and educate as many people as possible to prevent a kind of thinking that is, you know, doomed for self-destruction. I'm not sure that I can, you know, prove that this is, you know, what I'm supposed to be doing here. Mm-hmm. But it certainly feels right to me. And when I look at my life, there's a consistency in terms of the experiences I've had that have put me in a position where I have access to people that can make a huge difference. For example, I just came back from Las Vegas where I met with Bobby and Carrie Kennedy, the children of Robert F. Kennedy, and we're going to help them and their Human Rights Foundation reach a larger audience. So, you know, there's many things I'm doing both in the world of, you know, science and mind-body, but also starting now, I guess, more in a political realm as well, though I would say in an apolitical way, you know, to be an influencer, and I'm very comfortable with that role. I'm still a little skeptical of what the guides have told me. On some level, they feel that I come from the future. I think it's 2350, and there are alternate parallel universes, and I actually came back specifically because the last time that we were at this paradigm, we didn't make it as a human species, but there is a path where we do make it. So I'm kind of here to help us make it.
So, yes, in that regard, having that energy force, right, of putting your consciousness in the path that does make it, because with free will, anything's possible. And Carolyn May said this the other night, if everybody just took some time out to pray for the greater good of the high vibration, that we match that vibration, would you also say that those people who are listening, driving in your car, in the shower, when you're walking to the office, whatever it might be, take just a few minutes, 30 seconds even, to put that vibration out there? Do you think that would make a difference?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the books that Marissa has just released that we'll be bringing to a larger publisher is called The Snow Globe. Mm-hmm. And she's actually created an exercise that's as simple as a child shaking a snow globe, which is a good metaphor for the way we're born. We're born pure, like a snow globe. You're a little statue in the snow globe, and it's full of beautiful, white, innocent flakes that are pure. As you live your life, things happen. You watch the news, or you bump into somebody who just broke up with their boyfriend or girlfriend, and they're all in a negative state. Well, every time you have an interaction, your snowflakes become colored by those experiences. So she has a little exercise, which is very similar to what Carolyn has just recommended, where you clean your snow globe every morning. It takes about 30 seconds, and so you start the day in a better frame of mind and more likely to take actions and to contribute in a positive way from your true self, which is pure.
Right.
There's very few people that are born, quote, evil.
You know, evil exists, and it actually tries to interfere in whatever way it can with those who are here to raise the vibration of the planet. And the good news is that we really are headed for better, higher vibrations on this planet. Evil is really restricted to relatively minor interferences, such as what just happened with our conversation. And there's other, and they're quite annoying and small, like they're like gnats at a picnic. I mean, if you're at a picnic and you have a beautiful feast and a swarm of gnats comes in, it's going to spoil the feast.
Sure.
That's kind of the way things are right now. And of course, you know, some of the evil that's happening is quite evil, and you know what we see in the Middle East, and you know, there's a lot of bad things still happening. But overall, if you look at this over, you know, what is likely to occur over the next 20 to 30 years, we are actually, as a species, likely to overcome the resistance that we see all around us to living lives that work for the entire planet. And it's not necessarily going to be an easy time over the next 5-10 years, but if people will focus on the positive and focus on coming to terms with who they really are, why they're really here, what it really means to be a human being, there is actually a very hopeful trajectory possible.
So other than the snow globe idea, which is wonderful, give our listeners a few other tangible tips through your research that you apply in your world that can help us with that rising of the vibration.
Well, very simple things. I mean, take care of yourself is the number one thing. That's why all these self-help books actually sell.
Right.
You do need to be careful what you consume. What is the source of your water? What is the source of your food? These things matter.
Right.
They're going to have an impact on your body. It's very important to take some time, whether it's meditation or walking in nature, but at least 5 to 10 minutes a day where you remove yourself from the day-to-day noise that is, you know, and that's why the snow globe exercise is one way, but your way. I mean, you don't need to do that somebody else's way. Mm-hmm. We each have something that we do that brings us to our center. Mm-hmm. It's very important that we work from our center whenever we can. And this is for everyone, whether it's taking care of your child, being an athlete, working in business. Whatever you do, you want to do it from your center so that it's authentically you. What's wonderful about this new information that we're finding is the more we see how unified we are as a species, mm-hmm. the more we can value our individual personalities and diversity. If you believe that there is a creator soul or a creator God or a creator energy, mm-hmm. it's only logical that such a creator would create all of existence for the very purpose of diversity, of experiencing joy through 7 billion individuals rather than just through one cosmic energy.
Right.
So there's no conflict whatsoever with you being you and you also being the best you for everyone else.
So the fear that keeps creeping in, and I mean, people are experiencing this all over the place, the polarities that are happening. I personally, I always loathe the holidays because of the polarities that just exist within my family. And you know, this is just one household at Thanksgiving, let alone what's going on, you know, in different countries and so forth. I was just over in Europe and the people reacting to the fact that these two candidates were all we had here in the United States. They're scratching their heads going, what? Really? And then Carolyn Mace had a really interesting theory on these two candidates and what they represented, that it's, you know, we have the people that want to go back in time, right, and want to go back into good old day network. And then you have the woman in an identity crisis where they're afraid to be too feminine because then if they are, they're not taken seriously. But then some people say they're too masculine. Then some people don't trust her. That's like the representative, I think, of the female paradigm right now, which is in identity crisis. And so...
Well, I mean, you're being overly
simple.
Identifying with Hillary, no. Who certainly does not represent femininity at any level. But in terms of women, and I'm a man, so I'm not necessarily the best one to talk about this.
Right.
I did experience co-education when it was brought in to Yale, and boy, there was a lot of differences in the way the women were looking at the world and the way we were looking at the world. So I'm no authority here. Mm-hmm. But I will say, based on all the information that I have available to me, that there is absolutely no conflict with being you.
Right.
Now, if you're a woman who enjoys her sexuality, enjoys beauty, go for it. And yes, you're also a woman who enjoys her intellect and enjoys getting things done or enjoys being physical. Do it.
Right.
Some people can combine all of those things. Some people are going to be more one side than the other. But there's absolutely no reason to say, oh, I have to be more like a man to be successful. That's no longer true. It may have been true at a certain point. I remember when I interviewed the head of iVillage, which was at the time the largest female website in the world, and we were possibly going to do a book with the CEO, mm-hmm. and she had 5 huge, almost Secret Service type 6'3" guys around her, and at one point in the conversation, she looked at them and looked at me and said, I've got more testosterone than all of you guys combined.
Right.
And, you know, that was the way she felt she needed to be a leader.
Right.
And it was ironic because she was being a leader for supposedly a female website, mm-hmm. and not wanting to touch into her femininity.
Right.
But that's no longer the case. I think that you can be who you are. You can enjoy your femininity and you can still be a powerful leader.
But we need to get paid then, what you guys get paid. I mean, that's the problem is that
we
got to change that first, okay,
I'm
Bill?
I disagree. I don't step into that. You know, I don't have that authority, so.
Yeah, let's wipe the magic wand. Can we channel that one? When do your channel guides say that one's coming, Bill? It'd be lovely.
We can ask them that next time I meet. But
that'd be lovely. Well, let's talk about Intuition University, because I love this, and for years you've been talking about this. This is coming down the pike, and I think it's very exciting. Explain to our listeners what that is.
Okay, well, basically, we're going to start just small here in Encinitas.
Mm-hmm.
Marissa has found a location only 2,100 square feet, so it's not probably going to hold more than 50 or 60 people at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to start training not just her students, but anyone who's interested on how to develop their intuition. Now, for many people, when you develop your intuition, that's going to automatically open you to what others would consider psychic abilities, mediumship, even channeling. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she starts with the basics. She herself had none of these abilities that she was aware of as a young woman growing up. It wasn't until she had her first near-death experience, which was only about 6 years ago, that she was even open to considering that these abilities were possible. Mm-hmm. We're using the word intuition because that's a safe word.
Right.
Everyone, even business people, say, yeah, I just had a hunch.
Right.
Well, that's the safest point of entry. But we're calling it Intuition University so that it will be appealing to skeptics as well as those who know that intuition exists. But we're going to develop courses for just like a university. We'll have courses for young children, mm-hmm. courses for middle school, courses for college, and courses, you know, that would be considered graduate courses. And to some extent, where you are in your own evolution will be where you end up getting placed. Mm-hmm. You could be 60 years old and kind of needing the course that's for the children because you've been resisting intuition your whole life. Mm-hmm. So we haven't worked out all the curriculum yet, but it's going to be very simple, very inexpensive. We're not here to generate billions of dollars. We don't care too much about that. I mean, we know we're going to be successful, and you know, fortunately, you know, we all have good financial bases. You know, mm-hmm. whatever money we make will be so that we can grow this access to information as quickly as possible.
Right.
So we're just starting. We'll probably have, you know, we're doing some live events. We are going to do a live event November 18th, and it should be online as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what websites we're even using.
I was going to say, is it Waterside Productions or A Skeptic's Guide to the Universe?
We're creating a new I'm sure we can find information for those who want to go to Waterside mm-hmm. Productions, but I think intuitionmedia.com mm-hmm. is the site that has been created, you know, so that we can live stream and do some other things. Let me just check real quick. Gail, what is the website for Intuition Media? Is it intuitionmedia.com or does Marissa? Discoverintuition.com. Discoverintuition.com is where Marissa has been posting mm-hmm. her information, and I'm sure that's where all the information, not just on this upcoming course, but then on the additional courses. One of the things that we've been told to do by the guides is when we start Intuition University, at least once a week, to start recording, videotaping all of our sessions mm-hmm. and making these sessions available to everyone who's interested in this kind of information. We will, you know, because we have costs to do all this, probably charge $20 a month,
right?
You know, for access. But you know, so the amount of information you're going to get, we believe it, because it will include specific exercises and responding to the audience. So if someone has a specific need related to a relationship issue or a financial issue, they can, you know, get that request to us, and we will provide an exercise that should help with that specific situation.
So you had mentioned channeling to Steve Jobs. I'd be very curious, any business leader that Marissa's been in touch with, what their take is on the landscape right now and what we can do to help alter it in that positive trajectory.
Well, Steve specifically, we got into, you know, Steve still has some issues he hasn't resolved when he was on the planet, so we were talking more about those issues. I did ask him, you know, what's the next big thing? He didn't really have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, I think he mentioned something about, you know, Apple TV. And, you know, he was brilliant while he was here, and he left, you know, enough in his to-do list that Apple has thrived even post-Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that will continue, I don't know. There are other people. We have been told that there are other people on the planet right now who have received what they call packets of information, whether through their dreams or in other ways, that do include information about the new technologies that are in the future. Mm-hmm. And these technologies do, in fact, eliminate the need entirely for fossil fuels.
Nice.
There's other breakthroughs that will occur, or at least have the potential to occur, because no one and no guide can ever predict with 100% accuracy what's going to happen, because there are an infinite number of parallel universes, and which one you as an individual actually experience at any given moment in time is dependent upon the collective free will of the entire planet. So There's lots of hope for good things, but there's absolutely no assurance. And that's one of the reasons why what each and every one of us does on a daily basis actually matters, because it's our collective decision-making that's going to determine whether there's a repeat of a universe that has already occurred, in which we do basically make this planet uninhabitable, mm-hmm. or a different universe, which also already exists, in which we've evolved almost to the level of utopia, where there is none of the pain and suffering that is being experienced on this planet, or has been experienced on this planet for the last 2,000-3,000 years.
And the pain and suffering part, you know, you mentioned in Intuition University of working with kids. I think that a lot of our kids who are very empathetic, very intuitive, are just being medicated beyond their eyeballs. And I wonder if the guides are saying anything about that. It's that these children are very, very intuitive,
yes,
and they're having trouble adjusting.
Absolutely. Yeah, mm-hmm. There are many very simple, non-evasive exercises that Marissa is going to be channeling through, mm-hmm. that she's already channeled through, that will obviate the need for medication for the majority of children.
Nice.
This is really one of her passions. She herself was subject to seizures and many medications that actually made her a drug addict. One of the reasons I'm such a champion of Marissa is she has not had a golden, easy life.
Mm-hmm.
She actually became addicted to opioids, ended up actually even to heroin, ended up in jail, had to be in rehab, went through a lot of difficult times. And so she's extremely empathetic with young people who are suffering. In fact, in her new book, I Am Marissa, she is going to be going back in time and looking at the bad decisions she made because she didn't have the information that she now has, mm-hmm. and providing exercises which, had she had them at the time, would have avoided some of the really bad mistakes she made in her own young life.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, Bill Gladstone, thanks for doing all you do. Keep doing all you do. A Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, and all the Skeptic's Guides can be found on Amazon. Intuition University, you can find it at discoverintuition.com. Bill, you can find it at watersideproductions.com. What am I missing? Facebook, Twitter, you're all the above.
waterfrontdigitalpress.com. That's really where we're encouraging, because so many people, when they hear me speak, mm-hmm. they say, oh, I have a book. And unfortunately, the way the book business is today, unless you're very famous, mm-hmm. I can't get your book deal with the big or even the modest-sized publishers. So we created our own partnership with Amazon, and we are looking for talented authors who have the ability to market their own books, mm-hmm. and we will assist you in doing it the best possible way. And we're only doing about 50 to 100 titles a year, and we're starting to see some really good sales. We sold over 5,000 copies of our most recent book, Heart Intelligence from Heart Math. And so we are trying to offer authors who are not established a way to get published. So go to waterfrontdigitalpress.com. And that may help you.
Perfect. Waterfrontdigitalpress.com. Bill Gladstone, thank you so much for making time for us today and for all your insights. I can't wait to continue the dialogue as more things progress, more things change. I'm going to do my snow globe as soon as we get off the air and keep pumping that vibration in the positive space. And you do the same, okay?
Okay. Wonderful being on the show with you.
Thanks so much, Bill. We'll be in touch.